We have to go to mute now. Is everybody about ready to go?
Yep.
Ready.
Yes.
Yes.
Ready.
Get those goals.
Now, wonderfully enough, this is going to be recorded, edited, cleaned up, and we're going to send you copies of all the notes. So you don't have to take a lot of notes. I'm going to give you only one exercise in the midst of this seminar that that will take 30 seconds. But other than that, you just have to sit and listen and pay attention, and we'll send you all the notes so that you can go through it step by step. So just concentrate. The only thing you write down, write down any thoughts that pop into your mind. Because sometimes in the course of a conversation like this, an idea will pop into your mind, and that will be worth the price of admission, as we say. So let's begin. 5, 4, 3, 2. Welcome to this teleseminar on goals. This, 2009, is going to be one of the most challenging years in our lives economically. We see all over the place the tales of woe in the newspapers. They say if it bleeds, it leads. So every single day you read about the terrible things that are going on. But Ben Wattenberg, an author, once wrote a book called The Good News is the Bad News is Wrong. And if you look at the overall situation, you'll find that they're predicting that unemployment will go as high as 7 or 8%. Well, what that means is that 92 or 93% of people will be having jobs. And if you look at the economy and look what's going on, it's really not that bad. The financial industry has suffered dramatically because of the subprime loans, and it will gradually work itself out. We had a financial collapse in 1832. We had a financial collapse in 1895. We had a financial collapse in 2009. We had the Depression. And in every single one of those cases, we recovered and we got smarter. So the four most powerful and truest words ever spoken are, "This too shall pass." These words are applicable at all times, in all situations, under all circumstances, that this too shall pass. So instead of looking at the past and looking around what's around us, look at what we want and look at where we're going. That's what we'll talk about. Now, every year in January, I love January because December, January, I make a decision that, by gum, this is going to be the best year of my life. So I want each of you listening to say, this is going to be the best year of my life. 2009 is going to be the best year of my life until 2010. And the interesting thing is that when you make that resolution, then you start asking yourself the question, what would have to happen for 2009 to be the best year of my life? What would have to happen? What would I have to do differently? What would I have to start or stop? What would I have to get into or get out of? What would I have to do to make this the best year of my life? And that's what you focus on, because you can control that. You cannot control what's going on outside of you. One of the great rules for success is never get upset or unhappy about things you can't do anything about. Keep focused on the things that you can do something about. And you can focus on yourself, and you can decide who you are and what you want and work on that every single day. And that'll give you a tremendous sense of control, which will also give you a tremendous sense of optimism, confidence, and self-esteem. So we say that success is goals, and all else is commentary. This is one of the most important discoveries in all of human history. Success is goals, and all else is commentary. Wherever you find a successful person, you don't find a person who sits around rolling their eyeballs thinking happy thoughts, like some of the books will tell you. You find a person who is very, very clear about what they want and works on it every single day, like a farmer plowing a straight line to the horizon. Is a successful person is clear about what they want and they work on it. Your life only begins to become a great life when you clearly identify what it is you want, make a plan to achieve it, and then work on that plan every single day. Now, Napoleon Hill, who wrote Think and Grow Rich back in the 30s, right in the middle of the worst depression in history, had interviewed over 500 of the most successful people who had ever lived, people who started from rags and gone to incredible riches, and he interviewed them over a 22-year period and then compared his findings. And what he found was that the primary reason for failure is that people did not develop new plans to replace those plans that didn't work. And I thought, isn't that an amazing thought? Because if you look at your life, you'll find that lots of stuff that you do doesn't work. As a matter of fact, there's a rule that nothing works. Nothing works. At least it doesn't work the first time. So when you set a goal and make a plan and start working on something, it won't work. You'll run into obstacles and difficulties and problems and setbacks and unexpected reverses that today you cannot imagine. But what I've learned is this, is that if you have a clear goal, every single one of those reverses and setbacks contains a lesson, that you can learn that will help you to be more successful in the future. In fact, it's almost as if we only grow by having lessons. So therefore, if your plan isn't working, make a new plan. If you're not achieving your goal the way you expected, find a new way to do it. The rule is this, is be clear about the outcome or the goal, but be flexible about the process. Remember, when you set off, you have an idea that this is the way that I'll get from here to there. But nature may have another plan for you. Almost everybody who achieves their goal, based on a 13-year study at Babson College, almost everybody who achieves their goal, whatever it is, achieves it in a way very differently from what they expected when they started off. But what they didn't do is they never quit. They tried this and they tried that. They tried this and they tried that. If that didn't work, they tried something different. And surprise, surprise, they got to their goal, sometimes in the most remarkable ways. So this attitude of optimism and trying new things is really important. Now, I've been interviewed on more than 4,000 radio and television stations because of my books on success, achievement, business, leadership, and so on. And they always ask me, you know, what was the turning point in your life? What was the turning point in your life? Like Curly Joe in the movie City Slickers. You know, what was the one big thing? And I always got irritated when I heard that question because it's never one thing that makes you successful. It's lots of things. And it's lots of things done over a long period of time. And so I would kind of, you know, be a little bit miffed when I heard the question. But then I thought back, is there an answer to the question? And then I realized that there were three turning points in my life. And I went back over all the literature. And as you know, I've read thousands of books and articles on success. I've looked at the stuff done by the most successful writers on success, and I find that there's three things they all have in common. And number one, and I still remember, I was 20 years old. Number one, the three turning points in my life were this. First, I discovered that I was responsible for my life and for everything that happened to me. Now, at that time, I was a high school dropout. I was a construction laborer. I had no money. I had crummy clothes. I had no car. I lived in a small one-bedroom apartment. Actually, it's a one-room apartment. The living room and the bedroom were the same. When you opened up the couch, which was the bed, that's where you slept. And I had no future. I was thousands of miles from home. I had no money, no future. And it suddenly dawned on me, I'm responsible for my life. Now, up to that time, I hadn't thought about it much. And if I did think about it, well, I blamed my parents, and I blamed the economy, and I blamed my teachers, and I blamed this and everything else. And suddenly I realized, no, I'm responsible. So the three of the most powerful words you can ever say in any situation is, I am responsible. I'm in charge of my life. Whatever happens, happens because of me. And refuse to blame other people or make excuses. Now, the second turning point in my life was when I realized that if you're responsible, then the question is, responsible for what? What are you responsible for? So the second turning point in my life was when I discovered goals. And what I found is that successful people, first of all, say, I am responsible. This life is not a rehearsal for something else. It's the starting point of my success. And the second thing is what am I responsible for? What do I want? Now, without knowing what I was doing, what I did is I sat down and I made a list of 10 things I wanted to accomplish in the foreseeable future. I'd never done that before, never heard about goals before. And then I lost the list. But 30 days later, my whole life had changed. I still remember. It was like an incredible situation. Broke, poor, going nowhere, making a simple list of the things I wanted to accomplish. And in 30 days, almost every goal on my list had been achieved or partially achieved. I was struggling and had no money. Within 30 days, I had a good job in sales. I found a way to make sales really well. I was making more money than I'd ever made in a single month before. I'd gone from a rooming house to an apartment, a furnished apartment. I had gone from starving to eating in restaurants. I mean, it was I was soon promoted to sales manager and had 32 salespeople put under me, and I was 24 years old. It was the most amazing darn thing. So the discovery of goals is essential. Now, the third turning point in my life, and I just hammer this all the time, was when I discovered that you can learn anything you need to learn to accomplish any goal you can set for yourself. What Napoleon Hill found was that successful people had three things in common. First of all, they had particular skills in common. Second of all, no one started with these skills, was his second discovery. Third of all, is that they're all learnable, is that you can learn anything you need to learn. And this was the shocker for me. It took me literally from rags to non-rags. Here I was struggling, knocking on doors 14 hours a day, all day long and into the evenings till 9 o'clock at night, making one sale every two or three days and not very many sales. And then I discovered that selling is a process, that you can learn the sales process. If you can drive a car, If you can operate a keyboard, if you can use a cell phone, you can learn any sales skill. And my sales income in the next 2 years went up 10 times. I couldn't believe it. And I've taught these concepts to other people all over the world for years, and their income goes up 10 and 20 times as well. From literally being frustrated and broke by learning how, it's like learning a recipe in the kitchen. Instead of throwing stuff into a bowl and mixing it up, they learned the recipe. And once they had the recipe, they made sale after sale. So those are the three things. First of all, accept responsibility. Second of all, decide what you want. Third of all, learn what you need to learn to get it. Well, all success and business skills, all money-making skills, all sales skills are learnable. Nobody's better than you, and nobody's smarter than you. If somebody's doing better than you in life today, it's not because they're smarter. They don't have any kind of genetic superiority. They just learned the critical skills. And in business, sales, and money-making, all skills are learnable. The top people in every field today were at one time not in that field and didn't even know that that field existed. Everybody who's in the top 10% started in the bottom 10%. And what hundreds of thousands of other people have done, you can do as well. There's a new book that's just come out. It's called Talent is Overrated. And it's a very interesting book. It's getting a lot of reviews. But Jeffrey Colvin, the writer from Fortune magazine, studied successful people, and he found that when these people started off their careers, the heads of the Fortune 500 companies today, superstar executives, he said they didn't seem to have any special qualities or characteristics. He said, but what they did have in common was they realized that in order to get to the top, they had to master certain skills, whether they liked it or not. They didn't say, well, I'm going to do what I love to do, and I'm only going to do what I love to do, and so on. No, they said, if I have to learn how to use a keyboard, I'll learn how to use a keyboard. If I have to learn how to read financial statements, I'll take courses in reading financial statements. If I have to learn how to give public talks and presentations, by gum, I'll learn it. And what they did is they used what Colvin calls deliberate practice. They identified the essential skills that they would have to have, along with other skills, to achieve their goals at a high level. And they said it wasn't talent, it wasn't special ability, it wasn't great intelligence, it wasn't natural gifts, it was just a plodding approach to learning the essential skills necessary. And sometimes you're only one skill away from doubling your income. Sometimes you're only one skill away from having a successful, profitable company versus going broke or being marginal. And you've got to identify that skill, which we'll talk about a little later. So I want to give you the goal-setting process. I call this 14 parts. I promised this to you. And so I'll walk through the parts, and then I'll send you out a list so you don't have to make notes except in one place. Step number one in the goal-setting process is to decide exactly what you want in every key area of your life. Decide exactly what you want. Now, this will set you apart from about 80 or 90% of the population because the great majority of people know what they want generally, but what they have is not goals. What they have is wishes. They have dreams and fantasies, and these drive me crazy, by the way. You know, people say, oh, I have goals. Well, what are your goals? Well, I want to be thin, and I want to be rich, and I want to be happy, and I want to be successful and everything else. Well, so do children in mental institutions. I mean, these are not goals. These are just wishes. And we say a wish is a goal with no energy behind it. It's sort of like a cartridge with no powder in the bullet. You can shoot blanks all your life. A goal is something very specific. So when a person decides, this is what I want. I have a good friend named Dave Kekichin. He has this point. He said, once you've decided your major goal, he said, work on it as though someone had a gun to your head. Work on it as though someone had a gun to your head. And I thought, wow, isn't that a great concept? How many of us work on our goals as though we had a gun to our head? You know, we piddle away at them. We watch a little TV. We check a few emails. We make a few phone calls. Watch a little TV again and so on. But what if you had a gun to your head? How would you work differently? So deciding exactly what you want is the starting point. Now, the way you decide exactly what you want is you begin by idealizing. Now, idealization is one of the great skills of high achievers. Idealization is where you imagine that you have no limitations on what you can be or have or do. You imagine that you have all the time and all the money, all the friends and all the contacts, all the education and all the experience that you need to accomplish any goal that you can set for yourself. You just fantasize, almost like a child saying, well, this is what I want for Christmas. I want a ship and a helicopter and a boat and a yacht and a trip to Disneyland. They just fantasize, even though it's completely unrealistic. And this is what I teach the heads of Fortune 500 companies when I do strategic planning. I say, ladies and gentlemen, before we begin this planning process, let's imagine that we could project 5 years into the future, and this company was perfect in every way. Size, profitability, growth, reputation, people, staff, leadership. If this company was perfect, what would it look like? And then we go around the room and we have people throw out ideas and we write them down. And after we've written them down, 10, 20, 25 ideas, I say, now, are these possible? High sales, great quality, good reputation. They all say, yeah, these are possible in 5 years. Maybe not in 1 year or 2 years, but in 5 years, we could have excellent products, superb training, excellent leadership, great reputation, high profitability. I say, great, now let's work back to the present and say, what steps would we have to take starting today to get there 5 years from now? Because remember this, the time is going to pass anyway. In your life, the time is going to pass anyway. So you might as well have a really clear, exciting, ideal vision of where you want to go. This is the mark of leaders. Leaders have a clear vision of where they want to go with their lives. Now, imagine that you could wave a magic wand and make your life perfect in each of the four key areas of life. If your life was perfect in each area, what would it look like? Now, here they are. The first area has to do with your income. If you're on this program, you're very concerned about your income, maintaining it and growing it. So, if your income was perfect a year, 2 years, 5 years from now, how much would you be earning? How much would you be earning this year? How much would you be earning next year, the year after, and so on? Whatever it is, and don't be silly. Somebody says, well, I'm making $50,000 a year, so next year I want to make $1 million. This is not a goal. This is a form of self-delusion. You don't need help in goal setting. You need hospitalization because that's a silly goal. If you've never made more than $50,000 a year, then set a goal to make $75,000 or even $100,000. But don't set silly goals because what they do is they actually demotivate you. They don't have any motivational value. They actually cause you to become discouraged very early, and then you quit. But if you set a goal that's attainable, a goal that makes you stretch, a goal that you can see, I can see that. It's almost like being to the top of a mountain, and you can see the top of the mountain, and you're tired, but it's close enough that you push yourself a little bit further. So what you want is a stretch goal that is also realistic. And so how much do you want to earn? And so what you do is you say, well, this year I earned $50,000. Next year I want to earn $75,000, even if it's a downturn in the economy. And then the year after, $125,000. And then the year after, maybe $200,000. And then the year after, and so on. And that you can focus on. Now, what if you achieve your goals too fast? Well, just increase your goals. And there's no immediate danger. Now, number two area, it has to do with your family. And in reality, 80% or more of all your success and happiness is going to come from your relationships with your family and the people close to you. So if you're married, and even if you're not, say, what kind of a lifestyle do you want to create for yourself and your family or your relationships? What kind of home do you want to live in? What kind of car do you want to drive? If you have kids, what kind of schools do you want them to go to? What kind of vacations would you like to take? What would you like to do for the people in your family? If you could wave a magic wand and have a perfect lifestyle, what would it be like? And whatever it is, write it down, write it down, write it down. Now, the third area has to do with your health. And with your health, ask yourself, how would your health be different if it was perfect in every way? Think about if your health was perfect, if you weighed exactly the right amount, you had exactly the right level of fitness, you slept well, you woke up refreshed, you felt good about yourself, and then what kind of foods would you eat on a regular basis? What kind of exercise program would you have? What kind of vacation? What kind of resting program? You know, in exercise, we say that there's strength exercises, there's endurance or aerobic exercises, and there's stretching or flexibility exercises. And you need to do those three kind of in a rotation so that you keep your body in perfect shape. The average person today is going to live beyond 80 years. If you're listening to this because you have goals, you'll probably live to be 90 or 95 years old. Then set a goal to be in superb health, to be dancing at your grandchildren's wedding sometime in your 80s and 90s. And then say, what would I have to do starting today to make sure that I enjoy a superb level of health throughout my life? And then the fourth area of goal setting is your net worth. How much do you want to save and accumulate in the course of your working lifetime? Now, you know, I started off with this goal when I was in my 30s. I said, how much do I want to be worth? I said, hey, boy, that's a long time. I'm now 65. And I think, wow, that time went past like a flash. And as I said earlier, the time is going to pass anyway. So you've got to be clear about where you want to end up financially. And there's a rule that says you have to make short-term pain for long-term gain. If you want to achieve greatly in the financial future, you're going to have to make sacrifices in the present. You're going to have to discipline yourself. The rule for financial success has always been the same. Spend less than you earn. Spend less than you earn. All of our financial problems, individually, nationally, in the world today, are the result of people spending more than they earn and borrowing the rest. What we have to do in order to achieve financial independence is we have to spend less than we earn and invest, save and invest carefully the balance. But you have to know what your target is. How much do you want to be worth in a week, a month, a year from now? One of the goals that you have for yourself is to reach the point where you can live for 20 years without working. Now, the way that you achieve this goal is you determine that number. This is called the number. This is called your number. This has to be a focal point in your life. You say, how much would it cost me to live comfortably on a monthly basis today if I stopped working and had no income? So calculate how much it would cost to support your current lifestyle and write down that number per month. Then multiply it by 12, and that gives you the amount you'd have each year if you had no income. And then multiply that times 20, and that gives you the amount that you have to have when you quit. Remember, you're going to live a long time after retirement. So that becomes your number. So let's say that you need $5,000 a month to be comfortable. That's $60,000 a year. Multiplied times 20 is $1.2 million. So that becomes your goal. And you write it down, and you make a plan, and you work on it. And every month, every 3 months, you sit down and say, how am I doing? How am I doing? And my promise to you is this, is that if you're clear about your number, your chances of accomplishing that number go up several times, as opposed to most people who are reaching retirement today who never thought about it, and they're shocked. They're shocked. Two-thirds of Americans approaching retirement are shocked to find that they are miles from their number. That's why more and more baby boomers reaching the age of 65 are planning to work till 70 or 75 years. Why is that? It's because they don't have the money. Why? Because they never thought about it. So it's really important. So be clear about your goals for your income, clear about your goals for your family, clear about your goals for your health, and clear about your goals for your net worth, how much you want to have at the end of the day. So here's the exercise I'm going to give you. In 30 seconds, get ready with a pencil and paper. In 30 seconds, write down your three most important goals in life right now. Three most important goals in life right now. Write them down quickly. You have 30 seconds. 25 seconds left. If you can't think of anything, write money, money, money. 20 seconds left. Write down those three most important goals in life right now, quickly. 15 seconds. Write them down. Write them down. What are they? 10 seconds. You can't. There's no wrong answers. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Stop. Now, this is called the quick list method. It's one of the best goal setting methods or techniques that you'll ever learn. We find that if you only have 30 seconds to write down the answer to this question, my three most important goals, your answers will be as accurate as if you had 30 minutes or 3 hours. You can write this, do this exercise with your friends. Go home to your spouse and say, honey, write down your three most important goals in life right now. And then compare your goals with his or her goals, and you be prepared for a long conversation. When in our coaching programs, we have people write down their three most important financial goals, three most important health goals, three most important business goals, three most important family goals. And we keep breaking it down because when you only have 30 seconds to write, your answers will be extremely accurate. Now, sometimes with my audiences, I say, I have the ability to read people's minds, so I know what your goals are. In 80% of cases, I can guess what you wrote down. And people are a little bit skeptical. I say, your three goals are a financial goal, a family or relationship goal, and a health goal. And almost the whole audience cracks up. Because 80 or 90% of people will write down those three goals, and that's good, because those are your three most important areas of life, finances, health, and family. And you can give yourself a grade of 1 to 10 in each of those areas and say, how am I doing relative to these goals? And wherever you give yourself the lowest grade on those three areas, that's your biggest problem area in life right now. That's what's causing you the most worries and concerns. So that becomes the place where you focus and concentrate. Well, so once you've decided these three, then step number two is write it down. Your goals must be in writing. They must be clear, specific, detailed, and measurable. You must write out your goals as if you were placing an order for your goal to be manufactured in a factory at a great distance. And the people in the factory would work off your order sheet. So if your order sheet is not complete, what you will get back will be what most people get back. So you must be very clear and accurate. Make your description clear and detailed in every sense. The test that I use is imagine giving your goal to a 10-year-old child. The 10-year-old child should be able to read your goal and then look at your life and tell you how close you are to achieving it. It has to be that simple and that accurate. A 10-year-old child should be able to take your goal and explain it to another 10-year-old child. If your goal is any more complicated or vaguer than that, people say, well, I want to be healthy, or I want to be thin, or I want to have lots of money, or I want to travel. Well, how could anybody tell how close you are to accomplishing that? It's just simply too vague. And as a result, all the incredible powers of your mind can't go to work on it. It's almost like going to the best builder in your city, and you've got this beautiful piece of land, and you buy a whole truckload of building materials, and you bring them all to the land, and you say to the builder, here's the land, here's the building materials, build me a beautiful house. The builder will say, wait a minute, what's a beautiful house? Oh, I got it in my mind. Well, do you have a blueprint? Do you have a plan? No, I don't need a blueprint. I don't need a plan. I've got it in my mind. It's going to have rooms here and windows there. The builder would think that you're insane. And most people go through life with this idea. Oh, yeah, I've got my goals in my mind. I know what they are when I see them. No, that's not enough. They've got to be very clear. Only 3% of adults have written goals, and everyone else works for them. Remember this, only 3% of adults have written goals. When you have written goals and plans to achieve them, you move into the top 3%. And you cannot imagine how many average people, immigrants to this country with no language skills, no money, no friends, no contacts, people coming from poor backgrounds with limited educations, have literally gone from rags to riches from the simple exercise of writing down their goals and making plans to achieve them. So step number three. Step number one, decide exactly what you want. Step number two, write it down. Step number three is set a deadline. Your subconscious mind uses deadlines as what are called forcing systems. They seem to impel you. They seem to drive you consciously and unconsciously toward achieving your goal on the schedule that you set. If your goal is big enough, set sub-deadlines. If you have a goal to be financially independent in 10 years, break it down into 5 years, 4 years, 1 year, 6 months, 3 months, 1 month. Many people break their goals down into daily goals, and they work on their daily goals, which plug into their weekly goals, then monthly goals, and so on. So the more specific your deadlines are, the more you can achieve them. Wayne Gretzky had that wonderful line, you miss every shot you don't take. Well, you miss every goal that you don't have a timeline or a deadline for. If your goal is big enough, keep setting sub-deadlines. If you want to achieve financial independence, you may set a 10 or 20-year goal and then break it down year by year so that you know how much you have to save and invest each year. And then you hold your own feet to the fire. By the way, if for some reason you don't achieve your goal by the deadline, and that can happen when the economy turns around on us, simply set a new deadline. The rule is that there are no unreasonable goals, only unreasonable deadlines. Now, here's a great discovery. If you have the ability to write down a goal clearly and in detail, it usually means that you have the ability to achieve it somehow. You may not have any idea how you're going to achieve it today, but the very fact that you could write it down means that you have the resources within you and around you to accomplish the goal. So don't ever say, well, I can't set a goal for this or that because I don't know how I'm going to achieve it. Don't worry. Be clear about the goal. Be flexible about the process. Now, step number four is identify the obstacles that you will have to overcome to achieve your goal. Ask yourself this question. If my goal is to double my income in the next 2 or 3 years, ask yourself this question, why aren't you already at your goal? If you want to lose weight and be fit and trim, why aren't you already fit and trim? If you want to be financially independent or out of debt, and getting out of debt has got to be one of the most important goals you set for yourself, is say, why aren't I already out of debt? And that loops us right back to self-responsibility. It loops us right back to ourselves and realize the reason I'm not out of debt is because of me. It's me, O Lord, standing in the need of prayer. Now, in management and in life, there is something called the principle of constraints. Now, the principle of constraints is one of the greatest thinking tools that you'll ever hear. It basically says that there's always one main limiting factor or constraint that sets the speed at which you achieve your goal. So what is it for you? For example, let us say you have an appointment at 8 o'clock, and you live half an hour away from the appointment. So what is the constraint that sets the speed at which you get to that appointment? And the answer is when you leave. It's not racing through traffic. It's not going faster in rush hour. It's that the time is when you leave. So you say, all right, the critical thing is that I leave early enough so that I take all possible delays into consideration and I arrive at my appointment on time. So keep saying, what sets the speed at which you achieve your goal? What sets the speed at which you double your income? What sets the speed? What's the limiting factor in terms of losing weight, getting out of debt, accomplishing your other goals? Now, the 80-20 rule applies to constraints in this way. It says that fully 80% of the reasons that are holding you back from achieving your goal are inside yourself. Only 20% of the reasons you're not achieving your goal are on the outside. They're inside yourself. They're the lack of a skill, a quality, or a body of knowledge. One of the greatest single constraints on you and me is lack of self-discipline. I've written about that. I have an audio program on that and so on. Lack of self-discipline is the critical weakness that holds us back from achieving everything that's possible for us. Because it's not that we don't know what to do. It's just that we don't discipline ourselves to do it. But here's the good news. If you discipline yourself to do what you know you should do over and over again, it soon becomes a habit. And as Goethe said, everything is hard before it's easy. And so a habit is hard to form, but easy to live with. And once you've formed a good habit, it becomes automatic. You just do it automatically, and it's easier to follow the habit than it is not to. So ask yourself, is it a lack of a skill? Sometimes it's a single skill. Sometimes it's the ability to prospect. Sometimes it's the ability to close. Sometimes it's the effectiveness of your presentation. Sometimes in sales, it's the ability to get referrals or resales. So always ask yourself this question. What is it in me that's holding me back from achieving my most important goal? What is it in me? Now, this takes tremendous honesty, but it also takes tremendous courage. It takes a lot of courage to look into yourself and say, well, it's this particular weakness in me. Because what weak people do, what average people do, is they always blame their problems on something on the outside. Oh, it's my family, it's my parents, it's my boss, it's the economy. No, strong people look into themselves. So refuse to rationalize or justify or make excuses. Just say, well, the reason I'm not achieving my goal is because, you know, I spend too much time watching television, or the reason I'm not fit and trim is because I don't exercise enough, because I eat too much, and so on. And just admit it. Okay, once you've admitted it, by the way, you're sort of free of it. That's all psychotherapy does. It helps you to admit the problem. And once you've admitted it, then you can get on with the rest of your life. So step number 5, now you've identified the obstacles, identify the knowledge, information, and skills that you will need to achieve your goal. Especially identify the skills that you will have to develop to be in the top 10% in your field. Now, this is a subject that I'm really adamant on, is you must make a decision to be in the top 10% in your field in terms of accomplishment, success, and, of course, income. And remember, everybody who's in the top 10% started in the bottom 10%, because here's the problem. If you don't decide to be excellent in your field, the top 10%, you automatically default to mediocrity. You automatically default to being mediocre in your field. Nobody ever sets off in life and says, well, I'm going to be mediocre when I grow up. No, but because you didn't decide to be excellent, you became mediocre accidentally. And that's real scary, because there's no future for mediocre people. Mediocre people worry about money, and they worry about security, and they worry about their jobs all their lives. But the top 10% of people are the highest paid people and most respected and most esteemed people in our society. And remember, all skills that you need are learnable skills. So, one of the greatest discoveries in the last decade has been that your weakest key skill, sets the height of your income and your success. You can make more progress by going to work on the one skill that is holding you back more than any other. I've had people say, well, if I could just make better public presentations, I could double my business, but I'm terrified of public speaking. Well, everybody who can speak today on a platform was terrified of public speaking when they started and decided to get over it. Some people say, well, I couldn't possibly do that because I'm afraid of rejection. I'm afraid of calling people up and having them say no. Well, everybody who started off in sales was terrified of rejection, so get over it. In other words, and how do you get over a fear? You just do it over and over again until the fear goes away. I spoke to a gentleman recently whose whole career went sideways. He got into sales, and he said after one day of rejection, he quit. He said he just couldn't take it. He could not emotionally take the rejection. And he went back to working at a mediocre position of frustration. And he said, because he just couldn't take the rejection. I said, well, the way you take the rejection is you get on the phone or you get out there and knock on doors for 30 days. By that point, you're just laughing. You couldn't care less if people reject you. And from that point on, there's no limit to what you can accomplish. So here's the great question. What one skill, if you developed and did it in an excellent fashion, would have the greatest positive impact on your life? If your goal is to double your income, ask yourself the question, what one skill, if I was absolutely excellent at it, would help me the most to double my income? And you know something? As soon as you ask the question, you know the answer. It pops right into your mind.
Ooh.
And we don't like the answer. We feel uncomfortable with the answer. But remember, whatever skill it is, it's a learnable skill. And whoever is good at that skill today at one time was terrible at it. And whatever hundreds of thousands of other people have done to learn new skills, you can do as well. Nobody's smarter than you. Nobody's better than you. But here's the point. Don't let the absence of a single learnable skill determine your whole life, determine your income, determine your level of success. Say, no, by gum, I may not like it, but by gum, I'll learn that skill. I will overcome my fear and my discomfort. I will master that skill if that's what it takes. The rule is do whatever it takes. So what's one skill, if you developed and did it consistently in an excellent fashion, would help you the most to achieve your most important goal? Whatever the skill, write it down as a goal, make a plan, and work on it every single day. And here's my promise to you. If you do something every single day to get a little bit better in that skill, a week, a month, a year from now, you'll look back and you'll have mastered the skill. People will be following you around with clipboards to take notes when they see you doing it. People will be gathering around your telephone when you call people to hear you talk to prospects because you'll be so good at something today that you're not good at at all. Step number 6, identify the people whose help and cooperation you'll require to achieve your goal. Make a list of every person in your life that you'll have to work with or work around to achieve your goal. Start, of course, with the members of your family whose cooperation and support you'll require. List your boss, your coworkers, your subordinates. Especially identify the customers whose support you will need to sell enough of your product or service to make the kind of money that you want. Who are the customers? And once you've identified the key people whose help you will require, ask yourself this question, what's in it for them? Be a go-giver rather than a go-getter. Now, many people on this call today are salespeople or business owners, and they're concerned about the level of sales. And so what you have to do is say, all right, what can I do to help my customers more today than before? How can I help them more? I'll give you an example. When IBM started off selling, I was just talking to an IBM executive just 2 days ago. When they started off, companies were very reluctant to pay an enormous amount of money for the IBM 360s, and they realized that it was because the companies didn't have a vision of how the computer services fitted into their company. So they trained their reps to be strategic planning consultants. And what their reps would do is they would go to a company and they'd say, before we go any further, let us take you aside and put you through a strategic planning process where you decide upon the future of this business. And so they would. They would go to a resort, hotel, spend 2 or 3 days. And over the course of the 2 or 3 days, they would develop a complete plan, very professional for the business. And in that plan, part of it would be to dramatically streamline the information processing system of the business so that they could do things faster internally and serve their customers better. Now, where are they going to get the equipment to do that? How about from IBM? And who's the person who's conducting this entire strategic planning process at no charge to help them get a clear idea of their vision? Well, it just happens to be someone from IBM who can give us some recommendations on exactly the equipment that we need. And with that approach, IBM went on from being a secondary company to being the biggest company in the world of computers. In 1980, they had 80% of the world computer business because their focus was on helping their customers. So a great question is, how could you help your customers in an indirect way that would cause them to want to buy your product or service rather than those of your competitors? How could you help your customers in such a way that it would create demand for your product or service? Always think in terms of being a go-giver rather than a go-getter. think in terms of being a helper. Think in terms of going beyond what your competitors are doing. And sometimes by giving things away, giving free services, giving free guidance, giving free help, and so on, you can develop a propensity amongst your customers to want to buy from you rather than someone else. Many real estate agents, by the way, will call on a customer and say, would you like us to do a free appraisal for your house? We'll take your house, we'll run it through our computers, we'll look at recent resales, cost per square foot, and so on, and we'll give you an estimate of what your house is worth today. Well, everybody who owns a house is fascinated to know what the worth of their house is relative to other houses in their city or their neighborhood. So they will build up rapport, they'll build up a good feeling with them, and if ever you want to sell a house or buy a house, we'd love to be able to help you. And so what they do, since instead of rather than sitting in the office waiting for the phone to ring, they get out there and they aggressively offer free services, which create a propensity amongst their prospective customers to think of them first in the future. So this is what you do. When you think about the people whose help you will need, always think in terms of how you can help them. Now, mediocre people, weak people, are always looking at for what's in it for me, what's in it for me. And they want direct compensation. They want to get paid immediately for what they do, but not top people. Top people are always looking for ways to help, knowing that by the law of sowing and reaping, it will come back to them. To achieve big goals, remember, you'll have to have the help and support of lots of people. One key person at a certain time and place in your life can make all the difference. In fact, when you look over the history of your life, you'll find almost invariably at every turning point, there was a person standing there. At every crossroads in your life, there's a person standing there who guided you in one direction or another. So the more of these people that you know and have in your repertoire, the more likely it is you'll have the right person at the right time. The most successful people are those who build and maintain the largest networks of other people whom they can help and who can help them in return. Some of the most successful businesses in America are networking businesses, where salespeople and business people come together on a regular basis to share ideas, share prospects, share experiences, and so on. The more you network with other people, the more successful you're going to be in business. Step number 7, make a list of everything that you'll have to do to achieve your goal. Combine the obstacles that you'll have to overcome, the knowledge and skills you'll have to acquire and develop, and the people whose cooperation you'll require. Write them down. List every single step that you can think of that you will have to follow to ultimately achieve your goal. Make a list, make a list, make a list. Write it down, write it down, write it down. It's astonishing. Sometimes the very act of writing down everything that you're going to have to do to achieve your goal, now you have this all worked out, starts to make the goal come true. Gives you a clear picture of what you can do. Gives you an idea of your action steps. As you think of new items, add them to your list until your list is complete. Keep writing down new items until you can't think of any other steps that you could take to achieve your goal. Now, when you make out a list of all the things you'll need to do to achieve your goal, you'll begin to see that this goal is far more attainable than you thought. Remember what Confucius said? A journey of 1,000 leagues begins with a single step. You can build the biggest wall in the world, like the Great Wall of China, one brick at a time. Henry Ford had a great quote that I love. He said, the biggest goal in the world can be accomplished if you break it down into enough small steps. Isn't that amazing? Just break it down to enough small steps. You see, if you look at a goal, I want to double my income, or I want to be worth $1 million in 5 or 10 years, that's a huge goal. But if you break it down into small steps, you say, well, I could do this. I could pick up this phone. I could spend 1 hour prospecting each morning. I could make this plan. In other words, you break it down into small steps, and the old question is, how do you eat an elephant? And the answer, of course, is, one bite at a time. How do you achieve the biggest goal in the world? One step at a time. And then you have the courage to take the first step. You have the courage to take the first step, just like shoving off and skiing. Once you shove off, you start to go faster and faster. But what holds people back in life is they always have an excuse not to take the first step. When you take the first step, it seems that everything flows from there. Now, number 8 is organize your list into a plan. You organize this list of activities by arranging the steps that you've identified by sequence and by priority. Now, sequence means what do you have to do before you do something else, and in what order. You'll find no matter what the goal is, whether it's cooking, preparing a recipe in the kitchen, or fixing a clock, there's a sequence that you follow. And so write down the sequence. This helps you develop tremendous clarity. Second of all is priority. Organize your goal by priority. What is more important and what is less important? Remember, the 80-20 rule says that 80% of your results will come from 20% of your activities. Here's what I've found. It's had an amazing effect on my life. It's called the 20-80 rule. This rule says that the first 20% of time that you spend planning your goal and organizing your plan will be worth 80% of the time and effort required to achieve the goal. Planning is very important. You know, as you know, I write 4 books a year. This year I've got 7 books in my production line. And professional writers who write for a living will write a book every 2 or 3 years. I write 4 books a year, 4 published books. I'm published in 38 languages and 54 countries. I sell millions of copies of books all over the world. People say, how can you write so many books? That's very simple. I follow a process. I write it down. I've spent the first 20% of my time in writing a book is outlining everything that will be in the book and writing it down. By the way, if you've ever thought of writing a book and you don't know where to start, go to my website, briantracy.com, go to free newsletters, drop down the list, and it'll say how to write a book, and you can print it out. It's my method for writing 4 books a year. And there's no charge. It's a gift. And people have taken that who've been struggling with books for years. Suddenly, within 6 months, they've got a book at the publisher. So if you ever thought of writing a book, go and get that. And it shows you the points that I'm just talking about. And the critical thing is to get everything you're going to put in the book laid out first, and then it all starts to flow together. Step number 9 in goal setting is to make a plan. Organize your list into a series of steps from the beginning all the way through to the completion of your goal. Just like if you were planning a vacation, write down every step you're going to have to take from choosing your destination to finding the best tickets to organizing the hotel and so on. Make a list of everything you're going to do by sequence and priority. When you have a goal and a plan, you increase the likelihood of achieving your goals by 10 times, by 1,000%. Now, I've made this claim before, and people say, well, that sounds motivational and so on, but please understand me. It's based on exhaustive research. USA Today did a study of that. They found that people who set written goals for the year, made New Year's resolutions in writing, achieved their New Year's resolutions at 11 times the rate of people who had the same resolutions, but they weren't written. And study after study shows that people who have written goals earn 10 times as much over time as people without written goals. So don't even question it. Just do it. Plan each day and each week and each month in advance. In writing on paper. Plan each month at the beginning of the month. Plan each week the weekend before. Plan each day the evening before. Make a list, make a list, make a list. The more careful and detailed you are when you plan your activities, the more you'll accomplish in less time. The rule is that each minute spent in planning saves 10 minutes in execution. This means that you get 1,000% return on your investment of time and effort in planning your days, weeks, and months in advance. For example, to make a list of everything you have to do tomorrow, the night before, takes 10 to 12 minutes on average. It will save you a minimum of 1 to 2 hours of accomplishment the next day. You can increase your productivity, performance, and output by 25 to 50% the first day that you begin working from a list. Now, step number 10 in goal setting, select your number one most important task for each day. Set priorities on your list by using the 80-20 rule. Ask yourself this question, looking at your list of activities for the day. If I could only do one thing on this list before I was called out of town, which one activity is most important? Whatever you answer to that question, put a number 1 next to that activity. By answering this question honestly, you've now said this is what is really important and everything else is of secondary importance. Then ask yourself, if I could only do one other task on this list, which one task would be the most valuable use of my time? And then write a number 2 next to that task. Keep asking this question, what is the most valuable use of my time on this list, until you have your 7 top tasks organized by sequence and priority. Now, here's another question you can ask. When you look at your list of activities, ask, if I could only do one thing all day long on this list, which one activity would contribute the most value to my work and my goals? And you know something? There's always an answer to that. If you look at everything you have to do, you'll find there's one thing that if you did that all day long, it would contribute more value than anything else you could do. And it's usually the thing that you procrastinate on. So the rule is, do the worst first. Do the worst first. Do the thing that you're most likely to procrastinate on, the one that has the highest value, before you do anything else. Now, we say that focus and concentration are the keys to success. Focus means that you know exactly what it is that you want to accomplish. And concentration requires that you dedicate yourself to doing only those things that move you towards your goal. I teach a practice, time management practice called the AB theory. And the AB theory is very simple. It says there are two activities that you can do during the day, A activities and B activities. A activities are things that move you towards your most important goals, and B activities are things that don't move you toward those goals, or even worse, move you away. So here's the time management principle. You can throw out all your books, tapes, and courses is do only B or do only A activities. Do only those things that move you towards your most important goal, and don't do anything else. If you'll do that, you'll double your productivity, performance, and income tomorrow. And if you do it over and over again, it becomes a habit. And if it becomes a habit, you'll become one of the most productive and highest paid people in your field, and you'll move rapidly into the top 10% if you do only those things that move you toward the achievement of your most important goals. Is it easy? No, it's the hardest darn thing in the world. I have to fight with it every single day. There are so many little things that just are saying, do me, do me, do me, and we're tempted. A friend of mine wrote a book recently called Don't Check Your Email in the Morning. And people look at the title of the book and their heart stops. Oh, my God, how could I not check my email? They walk around all day long with their BlackBerries or on their computers checking their email. It says if you make a habit of checking your email and getting caught up in little, tiny, irrelevant, unimportant things, then what happens is your whole day slides sideways. At the end of the day, you're frustrated, you're overwhelmed, you never got your main task done. She says, do the worst first. Do your most important task, and as a reward, check your email. If you do that, you'll double your productivity and double your income. There's a lot of little techniques out there that are really great. Point number 11 is develop the habit of self-discipline. Once you've decided on your most important task, resolve to concentrate single-mindedly on that one task until it's 100% complete. Your ability to select your most important task and then to work on it single-mindedly without diversion or distraction will double and triple the quality and quantity of your output and your productivity, sometimes overnight. Now, single handling is one of the most powerful of all time management techniques. This means that when you start with a task, you avoid all distractions and you stay with that task until it's done. Once you've developed the habit of completing your tasks, you will earn 2, 3, and even 5 times as much as other people. Remember this, task completion, closure, closure, closure. You know, David Allen has a best-selling time management book called Getting Things Done. And I've read the book, and it's got a lot of great ideas, all of which I've written about for 25 years. But the one thing he has there, which I really liked, is closure. He said, close your loops. He said, take a look at every single task that's not complete and focus on completing those tasks, starting with the most important task. And if you develop a habit of starting and completing your most important tasks, you're going to become so productive, it'll be amazing. It unlocks your mental powers. It releases endorphins in your brain. It makes you feel like a winner. It gives you a surge of energy to complete important tasks. Now, step number 12 in goal setting is to practice visualization on your goals. Create clear, vivid, exciting, emotional pictures of your goals as if they were already a reality. Now, here's the discovery. There's a direct relationship between how clear you can see your goal in your mind and how rapidly it comes into reality. And the more you reflect on your goal, the more you visualize, even if you cut out pictures from magazines and look at them and feed those pictures into your mind like you're feeding them into a scanner, the greater clarity you have when you can close your eyes and see your goal as a reality, the faster it comes into your life. So see your goal as if it were already achieved. Imagine yourself enjoying the accomplishment of this goal. If it's a car, imagine yourself driving this car. If it's a vacation, see yourself on the vacation already. If it's a beautiful home that you want, see yourself living in that beautiful home. In visualizing, take a few moments to create the emotions that would accompany the successful achievement of your goal. In other words, if you did achieve your goal, if you did double your income, how would you feel emotionally? Would you be proud? Would you be happy? Would you be exhilarated? Would you feel full of confidence? Would you be happy? And just imagine and create the feeling. We say, get the feeling. Get the feeling. And it's interesting. If you practice this, you can actually manufacture the feeling. You can kind of, you have to work at it a little bit to start off with, but you can just manufacture and you connect that feeling like a plug into a socket with a picture of your goal. Is a mental picture combined with an emotion has an enormous impact on your subconscious and your superconscious mind. Here's the formula. T times E equals R. Thought, the clear idea, times the emotion that you would have if you achieved that idea, equals reality. It equals the result. T times R equals reality. A thought without an emotion has no power. An emotion without a thought has no direction. But a thought, a goal, multiplied times an emotion, causes it to come into reality very, very fast. Now, visualization is perhaps the most powerful faculty available to you to help you to achieve your goals faster than you ever thought possible. But you only get to the point of visualization after you've gone through the entire set thinking process that we've discussed about deciding what you want, writing it down, making a plan, organizing the plan, and so on. As you do that, like a Polaroid photograph, the goal becomes clearer and clearer and clearer. And since suddenly you can see it with such clarity that you start to move toward it and it starts to move toward you. When you use a combination of clear goals combined with visualization and emotionalization, you activate your superconscious mind. This is the most powerful faculty you have in the whole world. Your superconscious mind then solves every problem on the way to your goal. Your superconscious mind activates the law of attraction and begins attracting into your life people, circumstances, ideas, and resources that will help you to achieve your goals even faster. All improvement in your life begins with an improvement in your mental pictures. Now, step number 13 is the goal-setting exercise. And the goal-setting exercise is very simple. You take a clean sheet of paper, and you write the word goals at the top of the page, along with today's date. And I've taught this exercise to more than a million people in 45 countries. And they come back to me, and they say, this is the most incredible exercise I ever had. A year, 2 years later, I go back, and they say, you won't believe what's happened to me since I followed that exercise. So take a clean sheet of paper and then discipline yourself to write out at least 10 goals, must be a minimum of 10, that you'd like to accomplish in the next year or in the foreseeable future. You can write more than 10 if you like, but 10 seems to be the magic number. Begin each goal with the word I. Only you can use the word I with reference to yourself. And when you use the word I, it has an enormous impact on your subconscious and superconscious mind. Follow the word I with an action verb. I earn, I achieve, I run, I accomplish, I save, I acquire, I sell. Follow the word I with an action verb that acts like a command from your conscious mind to your subconscious mind. Now, when you write down your goals, describe your goals in the present tense as though they had already been achieved. This is the language that causes your superconscious mind to work. If your goal is to earn a certain amount of money in a certain year, you would say, I earn this amount of money by the end of this year. Always add a deadline. I call it a use-by date. So you say, I achieve this goal by this date. I accomplish this by this date. I earn this amount of money by this date. I weigh this number of pounds by this date. That tells your subconscious mind that this is a very specific command coming from head office. If your goal is to get a new car, you would say, I drive such and such a new car by such and such a date. I buy, I own, I acquire such and such a car by this date. Finally, when you write down your goals, always write them in the positive tense. Instead of saying, I will quit smoking, that's future tense, you say, I am a non-smoker. Instead of saying, I will lose weight, you say, I weigh X number of pounds. And always state your goals as though they were already a reality, as though you had already accomplished them. This activates your subconscious and superconscious minds to change your external reality so it is consistent with your inner commands. I cannot tell you how powerful this is. Always repeat your goals over and over again as though they're already a reality. I earn this amount of money. I weigh this number of pounds. I own this car. I live in this home. Step number 14, decide upon your major definite purpose. Once you have written out a list of 10 goals, ask yourself this question. If I can wave a magic wand and achieve any one goal on this list within 24 hours, which one goal would have the greatest positive impact on my life? Now, it's important that you do this in sequence. Write down the 10 goals, look at the list, and imagine that you could have all these goals sooner or later, but you could have one within 24 hours. If you could have any one goal on your list within 24 hours, which one goal would have the greatest positive impact on your life? Which one goal would change your life more in a positive way than any other single goal? And you know something? The answer always jumps out at you. It's a big goal. It's an exciting goal. Sometimes it makes you want to run and go to the bathroom. It sometimes causes your stomach to churn, makes your heart pound faster. But you always know what it is. And whatever your answer to that question, put a circle around that goal. Then you transfer that goal to the top of a clean sheet of paper. For number one, you write it down clearly and in detail in the present tense. Number two, you set a deadline on your goal and set sub-deadlines if necessary. Number three, you identify the obstacles that you'll have to overcome to achieve this goal and identify the most important one, internal or external. Number four, identify the knowledge and skills that you will need to achieve this goal and the most important skill that you will have to become excellent in to achieve the one goal that can have the greatest positive impact on your life. And remember, all skills are learnable. Number five, identify the people whose help and cooperation you'll require and think about what you can do to deserve their help. Remember, the word deserve comes from Latin, which is de servus, which means from service. And one of the marks of superior people is they always think, how can I serve other people at such a high level that in so doing, I'll be able to achieve my goals? They always think in terms of serving others to get the things that they want. Number six, make a list of everything that you'll have to do to achieve your goal. Add to the list as you think of new things to do. Number seven, organize your list by sequence and priority, by what you have to do first and by what is most important. Step number eight, make a plan by organizing your list into steps from the first to the last, and then resolve to take action on your plan every single day. One of the great secrets to success in goal setting is to do something every day on your major goal, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, away or at home. Do something every day. Step number nine, plan your goal in terms of the activities that you'll have to engage in to achieve it, daily, weekly, and monthly in advance. Now, here's a great key. If you want to lose weight, think of yourself getting up in the morning and what you'll eat, what you'll drink, and the exercise you'll do. If you wait till you get up in the morning, it's too late. So pre-program yourself by thinking through exactly the steps that you're going to take tomorrow, next week, next month. And it's amazing, when that time arrives, you'll have a natural feeling inside, a comfortable feeling of getting up earlier, doing the exercise, eating less food, saving your money. In other words, keep pre-programming your mind by visualizing yourself engaging in the behaviors that you need to engage in to achieve the goals that you want to accomplish until you've pre-programmed your subconscious mind to do it automatically when the occasion arises. Number 10, set priorities on your list and identify the most important thing that you can do every single day to move most rapidly towards your most important goal. And finally, number 11, discipline yourself to concentrate single-mindedly on the most important thing that you can do today until it is 100% complete. Practice single-handling with every major task. So let me conclude our program by just saying that the key is to resolve in advance that no matter what happens, you will never give up. This is an important part of pre-programming. In fact, it's been discovered over the years that persistence is the critical quality that makes everything possible. Persistence is self-discipline in action. Each time you persist and overcome the inevitable failures and disappointments you'll experience, you become stronger and better. You develop stronger and deeper character. You increase your self-esteem and self-confidence. Each time you persist to overcome adversity, you feel more and more like a winner. So decide exactly what you want. Write it down make a plan, and work on it every single day. If you do this over and over again until it becomes a habit, you will accomplish more in the next few weeks and months than many people accomplish in several years. So begin today. Take action now. Do it now. Do it now. Do it now. Thank you. Now let's open up the lines and let me answer any questions that you may have about anything that we discussed. Can our moderator open up the lines and begin taking the questions, please?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press star zero, and I'll go and pick up your name in the order received. Once again, that's star zero for questions. One moment, there are names coming in. Our first question comes from John. Go ahead, John.
Hi, Brian. I've been to a couple of your seminars and listened and read some of your books. And tell me, is this seminar that you've had today, I've been writing so fast I have cramps. Is there one place where you have this all summarized for us?
Yes. So we say if you are on this call, we will be sending you out a complete summary of every point. I mentioned that at the beginning. You may have missed it.
Right.
But you'll receive a complete summary, so you didn't have to take any notes. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
But you didn't have to take any notes because it's all written down.
Okay, great.
And
thank
the summary
so
will come to you by email. We have your email address. We'll be sending it out to you right after the seminar.
Okay, appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks, John.
Our next question comes from Stephanie. Go ahead, Stephanie.
Hello, Brian. Thank you very much for a very excellent and inspiring seminar.
Thank you, Stephanie.
My question to you is, what do you think of those self-improvement programs which say that you should focus on your strength or try to discover your passions and then try to make a success out of your strength or your passions?
Well, every great lie has a truth in it, which is what holds it together. And I don't disagree with that, but the rule is that there are many things that you have to do so that you can do the things that you want to do. Let me say it a different way. There are many things that you do that you don't want to do so that you can do the things that you do want to do. Nobody wants to wash the dishes. Nobody says, well, my passion is not washing dishes. I'm not going to wash dishes anymore. Nobody wants to clean their house. Nobody wants to work out physically, to sweat and everything else. But there are things that you need to do that may not make you happy, that are absolutely essential for you to do the other things. Now, one of the challenges we have, for example, give you an example in selling, Stephanie, is people say, well, I don't like to prospect, so I want somebody to go out and find all the prospects for me. I want to use direct mail, blah, blah, blah. I say, well, in order for you to use all of your other skills in selling, you have to learn how to prospect. Your other skills are of no value. Well, I just like to talk to people. Well, so does everybody else like to talk to people. But the fact of the matter is, in order for you to be successful in selling, to make a fabulous living, to have complete control of your future destiny, you have to get over your fear and discomfort of prospecting. The way you do that is you learn the skill, like riding a bicycle or learning a new piece of technology. So yes, it's important that you do what you enjoy. It's important in terms of a career, that you find yourself in a career that is something that uses your best talents and abilities and you look forward to and you enjoy. But remember, in the midst of this, there's a lot of things that are hard, hard work to master. And that's why I talked about Jeffrey Colvin's work on talent is overrated. Is some of the most talented people in our world had to force themselves to learn stuff that was really hard, that they didn't like. But by gum, they had to know that stuff in order to be able to use all their other talents at a higher level. So it's not a black and white question. Of course you should do what you love to do and put your whole heart into it. But sometimes I say to people that it could be that the reason you don't love your current job is because you're not good at it yet. You're not good at it yet. Nobody starts off, for example, if you're in sales. You start off in sales and you think, I'm a complete mess. Nobody talks to you. Nobody talks back. You don't make any sales. You feel frustrated. You're afraid. You spin your wheels. This is what happens with most people. Yes, it could be that selling, and I've worked with countless people who are on the verge of quitting selling today, who are millionaires and multimillionaires, own their own businesses, are some of the best salespeople in the world, and they say when they first started off, they felt like quitting, until they realized that they weren't good at it. And the reason they felt like quitting is because they were so frustrated at the results they were getting. So they decided that, by gum, before I quit, I'm going to become good at this. This is a skill. This is like riding a bicycle. And they put their heads down and they became very good at it. As they became good at it, they began to make sales. As they began to make sales, they began to make a lot of money. As they began to make a lot of money, they began to have a great lifestyle. As they had a great lifestyle, they could hardly wait to sell more. They loved what they were doing. And then they recruited people and instilled that love for their sales in them, and they've gone on to be vastly successful. So it's not a black and white question. There's a lot of skills that we have to master, and it's hard to master a new skill in order for us to use all of our other talents at a higher level. So it's kind of a long form answer for a short form question. But don't get sidetracked by people say, oh, you should only do what your passion is and only do what you love and so on, because no. Sometimes you don't know what your passion is until you dedicate yourself to becoming excellent at that. Even a great musician, is a fabulous musician, had to spend hundreds and thousands of hours mastering their craft before they were recognized as a good musician. Did that answer your question?
Yes, thank you very much.
Thanks, Stephanie.
Our next question comes from George. George, please state your question.
Yeah, hi, Brian. This is George. I've always referred to your brilliant book, Advanced Selling Strategies. And my question is, I'd like some insight from you. I have a sales team, a company of 10 outside sales professionals. It's high-level consultative selling with small to mid-sized industrial business owners.
Yes.
And we're particularly helping them develop online marketing, websites, ways to sell their product online. And your vital functions of selling, positive mental attitude, good health and appearance, product knowledge, prospecting skills, presentation skills, answering objections and gaining commitment, personal management skills, are all obviously all very vital. Now, My question or my request from you, please, I have several of my sales reps on the call here. What is the best way for successful professionals to become more disciplined at executing successful prospecting every day, making more sales calls, giving themselves a chance to have more closing opportunities?
Well, let me give you a couple of techniques. What holds us back from prospecting? I'm sorry, what was your first name?
My name is George.
George, if I said to you, George, I have developed a list of 50 people here who, according to our statistics, are all ready to buy. They just need you to call them immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave you that list, but this list is only valid for one day.
Mm-hmm.
So, because it's a very time-sensitive list. So if you don't call them today, they won't be interested. Now, if I gave you a list like that, how soon would you start in the morning working that list? Of course. If you were guaranteed that everybody was going to buy, you'd be like a house on fire.
Sure.
So what is holding us back is fear. That's all. It's fear. It's the fear of rejection, the negativity that we get, which is normal and natural because all intelligent human beings are sensitive to the opinions and behaviors of other people toward them. Okay, it's normal.
One of my favorite quotes of yours is, do the thing you fear and the death of fear is certain.
Yes. So let me give you two techniques that you can use to overcome this fear, actually to turn it around, to turn it, as my friend Tony Robbins says, turn fear into power. And a very simple technique, technique number one, is, and this, I learned this from a company, a friend of mine, they start everybody in the morning in telemarketing, and they start at 8:30 in the morning phoning. But then the manager says, all right, we're going to have a contest every day at 8:30, and you can't start phoning until 8:30. Whoever gets 10 rejections first gets free lunch, paid for by the company. All right, timing, are you get ready on your mark, get set, stopwatch, go. And everybody hits those phones to try to get 10 rejections as fast as they can.
Mm-hmm.
And they just wham, 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 dial, dial, dial. And I'll tell you what, they laugh, and they are laughing. I got three. And they're laughing like this. And then at the end of the contest, the person that got 10 rejections first, you know, gets a gift certificate for $10 for McDonald's or something like that. But somebody comes back and says, I lost again. Why? Somebody wanted to buy. Tied me up and I had to take the order and everything. Yeah, me too. I made a sale too, and I didn't get them. And this happens every day. They get into that office, and that team is so wired, and you're not allowed to get rejected till 8:30. You have to wait. Ready, set, go. And wham! So, and they do that every single day, and people can hardly wait to get to the office and get rejected. And so that's number one. And you, and notice the quality of the tone of voice when they're calling.
Mm-hmm.
Notice the emotion. I mean, these guys are happy. They're smiling. They're feeling good. They're kind of laughing when they're getting a rejection because it's part of the contest.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the second thing that you can do, which is it's another column, if you like, and it's based on the reward system. What you do is you get yourself a sometimes I use the idea of cookies. You take a cookie and you break it up into 4 or 5 pieces. You put it right there and you say, I'm going to give myself a bite of cookie every time I make a call and get through to someone, whether they say yes, no, or whatever. All right, so you focus on the cookies. And you say, but I don't get a cookie. I don't get a bite of cookie. Just like training a dog or a horse, when they do something good, you give them a little bite of something sweet.
Mm-hmm.
So you put that in front of you and you say, all right, I'm not going to give myself a bite of cookie until I get through. And then you just dial and you make the call. And what happens is it creates a kind of a disconnect within your mind. You're no longer so concerned about the result of the call, which makes you more effective on the call because you're not trying so hard, and because your mind is focused on the cookie. Just like the training an animal, it's focused on getting the cookie, not on the act. And you just do this on a regular basis. It's sort of like the Pavlovian response. You ring the bell, the dog salivates. You're familiar with what I'm talking about?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, in other words, they show a piece of fresh meat to a hungry dog and ring a bell. The dog would see the meat and salivate.
Yeah.
Then they would do this several times, and then all they'd have to do is ring the bell, and the dog would salivate. So now what happens is now the bell is the phone. So after you've done this, it takes no more than about 3 to 5 days for an hour. Once you've done this, every time the person sees the phone, they salivate. Psychologically, is they lunge for the phone. Because they've now trained themselves to look forward to prospecting, to look forward to picking up the phone, and the reward is no longer necessary. They no longer have to have the meat.
Yes.
And it works very effectively. Another thing that you can do is you can say, okay, you drink coffee when you come in the morning. All right, you make yourself a deal. You only get a cup of coffee after you've made 10 calls. And that's my deal. That's my deal with myself. You only get a cup of coffee, so you get there, and you say, all right, I'm going to give myself a cup of coffee after 10 calls. And you just get on, you just crank that phone until you've earned your cup of coffee.
Beautiful.
And you do this on a regular basis. I don't get my second cup of coffee after 10 more calls, 10 more contacts. And you set up this little reward system for yourself.
Yeah.
Now, it takes discipline on the part of your guys to do this for themselves. But what they're doing at an unconscious level is they're training themselves to look forward to prospecting.
Mm-hmm.
And once they're trained to look forward to prospecting, for the rest of their lives, they become unstoppable. They become unstoppable. They just become like forces of nature. They'll pick up a phone anywhere. They'll prospect anywhere. I mean, they're a danger. You get under an elevator with them, and you don't get off the elevator without having had an elevator speech. And you just train people, and you can train yourself. Once you're trained to associate prospecting with something positive, you just hardly wait to do it.
Yeah. I like that. Thank you.
Thank you, George. Questions?
Our next question comes from Mike. Mike, please state your question.
Brian, thank you very much. Great program.
Thank you, Mike.
I have 2 young daughters, and I've heard before that you think goal setting is very important to start when kids are young.
Yeah.
How would you suggest we do that? How do we approach that? What would you recommend our approach be? Because I think, you know, obviously I don't want to overwhelm my children, but I think it's very important, too.
Well, the answer, and I don't mean to be glib because I have 2 young daughters of my own. The answer is very simple: is ask them what are their most important goals. Now, how old are your daughters, Mike?
They're 3 and 6.
Okay, well, they're probably their most important goals are have to do with their friends,
right.
And they're pretty young to be setting goals. So at this stage, what you would say is if you use the magic wand technique, if you could wave a magic wand, honey. What one goal would you want to accomplish more than anything else? And there are no wrong goals. They can say anything. Go to Disneyland, fly to the moon, doesn't matter what it is. And what you do is you help them just to think about goals at this stage and say, well, that's a good goal. And always encourage them, say, that's a good goal. And then whenever they do anything that moves them toward the goal, then reinforce it. Say, wow, that's great. That's wonderful. Wow, that's terrific. My daughter is in writing. When she was about 9 years old, she came to us and she said, I want to ride horses. And I said, oh, that's great. You know, you want to ride horses. So we took her and got her horseback riding lesson at a local amusement park. No, no, she said, I want to ride horses. Well, she's now, this is 9 years have passed. She's now an accomplished equestrian. She owns 4 horses. She rides in competitions, national competitions. She wins awards. So once she started into horseback riding, no matter what she did, and when they start off, they don't do much. No matter what she did, I told her, wow, that's great. That's incredible. That's great. But all she did was just ride a little pony across a log lane on the ground. Well, that's great. I mean, look at the way the pony jumped and look at the way you sat and everything else. Well, I just kept reinforcing her. Today, she's one of the most accomplished goal setters you can imagine. She's focused. She's disciplined. She's positive. She's in control of her life. It's just literally amazing to watch. Because when she set little goals when she was young, I always gave her positive reinforcement. And that's the greatest thing you can do, just to help them decide what they want, what would you like to accomplish, and then always reinforce them with every step they take. Never, never criticize. Always, always tell them how well they did.
Okay,
and pretty
great.
Soon they develop that Pavlovian response, Mike, is they start to think about themselves separate from you. They don't have to have the bell ring anymore. When they think of a goal, it makes them happy and positive.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Brian.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thanks.
Questions?
Our next question comes from Andrew. Andrew, please state your question.
Yeah, this is Andrew Garcia calling in from mainland China. What's the next book I should read about today's topic to reinforce today's topic? What would you suggest?
Well, Andrew, my book Goals, I believe, is in Chinese, both simple and complex characters. And if you want it in English, you can get it through Amazon.com. It's in paperback. So you'd want the whole book.
Yeah, I need English. No need the Chinese.
Then get the book Goals. And it's available. You can get it through our website, but you can get it through Amazon. It's one of the best-selling books in the world in multiple languages. And it's the most complete and comprehensive book on how to set and achieve goals ever written. It basically killed the genre. No more books. The publishers have told me in New York, no more books will be written on goals for the next few years because this book is so complete.
The title is just Goals? Is that just the title?
It's titled Goals by Brian Tracy. And it's the result of my 30 years of research and experience in setting goals.
Okay. And one suggestion for you. Next time, can you make it like a webinars where we can see your text, highlight points, so in case some people visually learn instead of by audio?
It's a great idea. Andrew, we've given that a lot of thought, and we have done that with different subjects. The challenge is that many people who are listening to this listen to it in their car. They listen to it while they're traveling. They listen to it in the office. They listen to it when they do not have access to a computer. And so we thought of it's a thing that we consider all the time. But thank you.
It's 3 o'clock in the morning here. So.
Well, Alexander, I hope I see you when I come to China. I come there. I'll be coming there now 10 times a year to Shanghai,
right,
Beijing, Guangzhou, and so on. So I hope I see you.
You got my email on your list. Find me.
Thank you, my friend.
Okay. Cheers.
Cheers.
Our next question comes from Melissa. Melissa, please state your question.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, Melissa.
Thank you. I'd like to ask if you have any suggestions for helping to develop persistence. I seem to have trouble with that one.
Yeah, me too. You know, I say that persistence is self-discipline in action. And what I have found is that people who are the most disciplined feel themselves to be the least disciplined. Whenever you meet a person who is highly disciplined, they think that they don't have any discipline at all. So we never feel really that we're doing great at it, which is good. Because other than that, people who feel that they don't need the qualities become complacent and lazy. So the critical thing is to persist in little things and always think in terms of self-discipline with regard to persistence. Self-discipline just means that you force yourself to take one step further. You just force yourself to do one more thing. You take one more step to complete it. And Andrea, a wonderful woman in the 30s named Dorothea Brand, wrote a book on the subject. And what she said is that the self-discipline is developed, or persistence, the two of them are developed in little things, like flossing your teeth, like putting things away before you start your day by planning your day in advance before you do it, right? Especially by task completion. And this is one of the most important things I've learned in time management, in a lifetime of study, is that task completion or closure is a critical character builder. And I mentioned it earlier on the talk about closed loops. Going back, if you're sitting at a desk like mine, I've been away for almost a month, more than a month, traveling. My desk is stacked up with things that I need to get cleared up and sent out and done and everything else. And lack of closure is a major source of stress. Causes you frustration, causes you irritation, causes you fatigue, and so on, where closure psychologically releases endorphins in your brain, makes you feel strong and positive, gives you motivation to close the next task. So always think in terms of task completion. Napoleon Hill called it completing your transactions. If you start it, complete it. Start it, complete it. Just go through your life closing all the loops. And that act of discipline will actually motivate you to continue closing your loops. And that's really what all the persistence is. Close the loop. Just don't quit.
That's great, Brian. Thank you so much.
I
think I have sort of had some of those ideas, but it's nice to hear it from you as well.
Thank you, Melissa. Next question.
We have no further questions, sir.
Wonderful. Well, we're at the end of our seminar. Thank you very much for being here. This has been a fabulous time, and I wish you to make 2009 the very best year of your life. And just say to yourself, by God, this is going to be the best year of my life. This is going to be the best year of my life. Now, if it was, write down 10 things, 10 goals, 10 things that would happen if this was the best year of your life. Write them down in the present tense. I earn X number of dollars. I weigh X number of pounds. I live debt-free. I drive such and such a car. Write them down. Pick the most important thing. Make a plan to accomplish it. Work on it every day. And my promise to you is a year from now, when we talk again, you'll have accomplished more things. You'll even amaze your mother-in-law. Thank you very much for being on the call. Talk to you again later. Bye-bye.